In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
The biggest, most vicious, most ferocious, and most effective killer of leftist Marxist plans is reality. Yes, real life is the one true enemy of Marxist plans. Like planned utopias. Don't work, won't work, and will never work, because people who are given free things lose the ability to connect the necessity of work with rewards and value. Not to mention it requires someone else to tell you what to do and to believe, otherwise you're an enemy of utopia because you don't fit in. Like free healthcare. It's not free. And people who think it's free need better education than the free public school system can give them. If passed, Senate Bill 704 would set up a committee to figure out how to implement Measure 111, passed in 2022 by Oregon's voters, which called healthcare a fundamental human right that the state must pay for. This committee would be tasked with how to turn Oregon's already failing and expensive medical system into the ash heap of socialized medicine to offer free healthcare at an initial minimum cost of $54 billion. You know, to make us just like Canada, where they are actively encouraging old people to kill themselves to save the system money, to the point that assisted suicide is now the sixth leading cause of death up there. Oddly enough, or not, the ballot measure does not say, let's run headlong into socialized medicine. It merely says, universal access. Well, we already have that. If you show up at a hospital and can't pay, they still give you medical treatment. The ballot measure never said socialized medicine or single payer. But that's what the Democrats are rushing toward. What it did say was cost-effective. Only in a Marxist mind who has never lived in the real world can you believe that $54 billion is free, or even remotely cost-effective. And oh, by the way, for any leftists listening, if you think this will cover million-dollar healthcare bills as you demand the most expensive testing, the most expensive doctors, the most expensive experimental drugs, boy, are you in for a dose of reality. Oh, those treatments will be out there. But they will only be available to the rich. If you're getting free healthcare, you get the cheapest doctors, the least expensive treatments, because the government will have the fiduciary responsibility to make sure that you cost the state as little money as possible, which is why they may encourage you to kill yourself and save all of us the bother and the money. You didn't think they cared about you, did you? What is different is that the Oregon Constitution now reads that healthcare is a fundamental right. No, it isn't. Healthcare is a product of work by someone else. A right is not something someone else is forced to provide you. You are not entitled to someone else's labor, because there's another word for that, slavery. To talk about what is happening in the legislature, we've been talking on a monthly basis with Senator Dennis Lithcomb. Dennis represents Senate District 28 in Southern Oregon. District 28 goes all the way from the California border through the Klamath Falls areas, west to outside of Medford, and then all the way up to the outskirts of Bend in Central Oregon. Dennis, it's always good to talk to you.
You bet. It is great to talk to you guys, too. We are in a kind of hectic part of the session. Everything that's been done in the House is getting pushed across to the Senate side. Everything on the Senate side is getting pushed over to the House side. And we are in the last week of that right now. The deadlines happen, but everything that's, quote, in process gets pumped out so that it goes to the other chamber. And it's supposed to be a bicameral or bi-chamber kind of environment. But we've had 4,500 bills. There's nothing bicameral about this. These are all one-sided bills. A lot of them are quite objectionable to the regular folks in your listening audience, and very few of them make meaningful, positive change.
How many of those 4,500 have advanced or will advance to the next round?
Oh, I don't know. Not less than a fifth. Oh. Somewhere between 500 and 800, I would guess.
That really shows you how many bad ideas are out there. I mean, that's not even, what, a ninth of 4,500 if there's only 500 that advance. That's a lot of bad bills.
Well, you don't know that they're bad bills. Like, none of my bills, I had probably 20 bills. I actually am probably the least productive in terms of bill production. Because I think we ought to get away from government running every aspect of our lives, and we ought to give people their own moral agency so that they can make choices within a free enterprise environment. That includes school choice, it includes mm-hmm. food choices, it includes deciding what you will do with your money and where you will express compassion in the marketplace. There's no sense in taking your economic resources, giving it to a bureaucratic nightmare, and then expecting them to do great things with it. It just won't happen. So I'm on the low scale. I had three of my bills get heard. So that means three out of 21, that would be 1/7 of all of my bills got heard. They just threw the others into the waste can. Wow. And some of those, a lot of those were pro-life or pro-school choice bills or conservative value, family value, traditional value-oriented bills. And so that now there's 13 independents and Republicans. Do that same math against all of their bills, and you eliminate a large stack of it. Right. This is a Republican bill. It goes into the trash can. Huh. Here's a Democrat bill. Well, let's consider it, you know. And so it's hard to make statements, but here's what's true, and you were close to it. There should not be this many bills. Nobody can analyze or understand these bills with any sense of propriety. This isn't a bicameral, a deliberative process. This is just throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what sticks. And this really needs to change.
Mm. I think a large part of what is happening with the legislature right now is that too many Oregonians don't understand the legislative process, in the sense that all you need is that simple majority and you control the flow of the bills. And I really look forward to one day where the Republicans can retake at least the Senate and hopefully the House at some point as well, because you wouldn't have these 4,500 bills going through there. I mean, I would hope that you could limit, say, hey, you know, let's limit the number of bills, period. Pick your top five and we'll consider those. And then if you have time for the rest, you start allowing some other ones through. But I mean, the whole thing really comes down to the majority has not just the power over the bills that come through, but they set the agendas on the committees. They pick who are on those committees, and all of the rest. Talk to our audience a little bit about that process.
Well, yeah, you named it perfectly. Split the legislative body in two. You just need 50% plus one. And then that party, which is either Democrat, or it could be independent Democrat or Republican. It happens to have been Democrat for the past, several years running. That party gets to organize the process, the calendar, the committees, who's chair on the committee, who's vice chair, et cetera. So on the Senate side, there are five committee members on every committee. Those five members are always, every day and always, there are three Democrats and two Republicans. So your listening audience knows the score without even hearing which bill. Is it the CAFO bill? Is it the single insurance payer bill? Is it the bill to make the potato the tuber of the state? It does not matter. The score is always 3-2 at the committee level, yeah, and then it goes to the Senate floor, and we push it on from there. It's really an important concept for your listeners to gather under their hats.
Right.
So that
because when one party controls a house of the, you know, whether it's the House or the Senate, They control everything that goes through that house for sure. Okay, lots to talk about with everything happening in the legislature. Up next, Oregon's continuing lurch towards socialized medicine. Can Republicans do anything to stop bad bills? We'll talk about that and more with Senator Dennis Linthicum. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today to Senator Dennis Linthicum. This is our monthly check-in with him about what's going on in Oregon State Legislature. Dennis, in terms of the, you know, going out of that last segment there, we're talking about how the Democrats control everything that goes in the House. It would be the same thing if the Republicans was doing, were the ones in charge in the majority. Before we got on the air, it sounded to me like the Democrats are not really bending on anything, and they're just pushing with all their might, as you put it, towards a dead-end tunnel. Talk to us a little bit about what's going on right now with inside of these chambers.
Well, yeah, I think that's really true. I don't see any bicameral willingness to negotiate on any of these things. The House Bill 2002, which was here last Tuesday, had a fabulous turnout from individuals who were concerned about genital mutilation of young teenagers and prepubescent kids, you know, that we would be willing, quote unquote, to take, you know, healthy breasts off of your teenage daughter at 14 years old, just, you know, causes some people to say, wait, really? Or that we'd give hormone blockers to your son because he had some kind of gender dysphoria or some kind of confusion because of the media complex. The media complex are pushing these stories that normalcy is a tragedy in the human sphere, and what you should really seek is the abnormal. And so we had literally just under 1,000, 800 maybe individuals show up for the testimony on against House Bill 2002.
Good.
And the testimony was just powerful. They went from 3 p.m. to 8 p.m. at night. And yet the proponents continue to harp on, you know, trying to save the life of an individual who's confused. And they don't seem to really care about, you know, whether or not that confusion could be stopped through counseling. That's against the law in Oregon. You can't counsel somebody away from transgender surgery. So, of course, everybody says, all right, then we'll counsel them towards transgender therapy. Mm-hmm. And it gets really confusing for kids. Is there a normal? Can anyone define a woman? And you have to say thank you, Lord, for Matt Walsh and his, you know, what is a woman video commentary on the Daily Wire. What a fabulous program, because it just exposes the hypocrisy and incontinuity of these arguments.
Well, the big problem that I see with these transgender stuff is they're going after kids. These are underage kids. And they are having the weird, twisted adult fantasies of the adults in their lives pushed on them rather than just letting them be kids. After 18, they're adults. They can do what they want. But these are kids. And I think they ought to be hands off when it comes to these adult issues.
Yeah, that's the position, you know, most traditional family values, conservatives, people of faith, that's the position all of those individuals are taking. And, you know, you have to wonder what's the driving force, what's the momentum underneath the covers, what's going on here that they're hiding from the public. And I think normalcy is what they're trying to hide from the public mind. Is there is a normal. It has to do with male and female. It has to do with families. It has to do with husbands and wives and children and relationships within that family sphere. And that bleeds out into the community and into church and places of faith. and synagogues, and that bleeds out into the public square and ends up impacting, you know, government policy or political worldview. And they want to stop it right when it starts, i.e. male and female. And if they can cut it off right there, they've got the whole game in their bag.
Is there any bills under consideration that would make it easier for these children when they become adults that they regret cutting off their breasts or cutting off their male parts, that they can turn around and sue the butts off people that convince them to do this, especially counselors, especially the school systems and teachers and principals? Can they be sued?
Right now, the bill HB 2002, what it does is it creates a private right of action if you don't do the job, the dirty deed. If you don't mutilate their genitals, you can get sued. But there's no, you know, counterproductive. Well, wait a minute. The real problem is society has become so technologically sophisticated, they've lost the sense of wisdom. Like, is this medically necessary? And the answer is clearly no. You would never remove a healthy functioning organ, be it a mammalian breast or an ear. You just wouldn't do it. No doctor, if I walked in and said, I'm confused, I think I want my ears removed, they would send me to a counselor. So if you walk in and all of a sudden now you're, because it's in this sexual freedom realm, if you say, I would like my breasts removed, they say, sure, we got a opening next Wednesday. Hey, we had someone call in and cancel their Tuesday appointment. Can I fit you in on Tuesday? And that's exactly how easy it is. And they like to pretend they go through counseling, but they never counsel out of surgery. They always counsel toward surgery. There's a ton of money to be made. And I think that's another driving force.
Well, there was somebody there just talking about it on the radio. I forget the name of the show. I think it was on TLC, where it featured this transition child that had been pushed into this by their mother since about the age of five. I think it was a female that had cut her breasts off, if I remember right. And now she deeply regrets it. She's 18 years older now, so she's 23, and deeply regrets this. And I really think there needs to be ramifications for people that are pushing this. They have to pay some kind of penalty later on when you push. These are surgeries. They can't be reversed. So there has to be some sort of ramifications, some sort of penalty for people that are pushing children into this that don't have the wisdom of an adult to be able to make these decisions and say no.
Yeah, and I think your listening audience could go watch the video from that event somewhere near the 5:15, 5:30 mark, somewhere in there. It started at 3, so a couple hours in, a young lady came up and described her situation. It just exactly like the individual you're describing, and she was a powerful, humble, tearful recap of what happened to her and how there was no honest appraisal. It was just part of the momentum of the moment. And she regrets it to this day. She realizes, I will not be the whole woman I was designed to be. And now you see some of the religious or secular atheistic overtones to this. You weren't designed. You slimed out of the pond.
Yeah, yeah.
You're just the result of thousands of years of pond scum finally. Yeah,
and in that case, you're not an individual. You're not a human being. You're the plaything of somebody else in your life. Okay, let's go ahead and take a break there. Coming back, we're going to have lots more to talk about with Senator Dennis Lithcomb. Stay with us. And welcome back. back. This is our monthly check-in with Senator Dennis Lidcombe, who's out of District 28. That's in South Central Oregon. We're talking to him about the legislature and how it continues to churn out bad bills upon bad bills. And so, Dennis, going out of that last segment there, you're talking about some very powerful testimony from that young woman who had been transitioned by her parents, I assume, where she cut off her breasts, and now here she is regretting all of this, and it's not something that she can go back to. And I'm just curious, did that have any impact whatsoever on those Democrats that were sitting there listening to this?
I actually think it would have, or it actually did, and it would have been really powerful, but the chair said, I'd like to take a break now, and broke up the meeting, and they all got, you know, everyone left the room for a half hour because it was too emotionally powerful. It was too strong. It was an enormous statement that was completely contrary to the goal of what the chair wanted. Aside from that, before the chair gaveled into recess, the chair says, "We appreciate your story. I don't agree with you." What? How can you not agree with this woman who realizes she made a horrid mistake and would like to look for, would like to prevent other children from getting rolled in the same way? And he says, "I disagree with your view," and it's not her view; it's her life. And he gavels into recess, and the room, you know, vacates, and then people come back in after, you know, almost 30 minutes. And so he took the steam. There was this momentum. There was this steam. There was this power that was coming from testimony. And he gaveled the meeting to a shut.
Well, it's shocking that they would say that. I mean, how do you disagree with somebody's interpretation of their own life? I mean, that's like saying somebody coming forward saying, I really regret the loss of my parents, and I'm very saddened by their death. And they would say, well, I disagree with you. I mean, yeah. These are emotions that somebody experienced as a result of their actions and regrets what happened. And that's just, I can't even fathom somebody that thinks that way or doesn't think that way, actually. So
and what's interesting is the radicals have been all claiming all along that your story is valid
and lived experiences
should always be freely aired because and nobody can disagree with you. So in fact, when you say if I were to say I think I'm a woman, nobody can disagree with me. I think I'm a woman. And you can't even try to counsel me away from that because that's what I think. And so it shows the hypocrisy and incontinuity of the left and their perspective on these issues.
Yeah, it's all about politics. It has nothing to do with the individual feelings, the individual emotions, or any of that. You are only a cog in their little wheel, and unfortunately, people just get run over by this, and it's because they put politics so much in front of people. So it's really sad. In the past, Republicans have walked out to deny a quorum to the supermajority Democrats who needed Republicans in the building before denying them a voice. So thanks to a ballot initiative, uneducated voters took that off the table, thus ensuring that the majority can trot all over minority views. I mean, just imagine if Portland had denied blacks the rights to protest against things that whites were doing to them and fine them if they did protest. So what tools, if any, do Republican legislators have in the House or Senate to stop bad bills?
There are several things. They're all little things, though, in terms of they're not so much stopping bad bills, but making the majority party choose which bills they want to allocate time towards. For example, we in the Senate have been reading bills. That's a constitutional requirement. So we've simply been saying, look, it's our constitutional mandate. We have a fiduciary responsibility to the people of Oregon. We want bills to be read on the third reading. In other sessions, you may have noticed where they set the Constitution aside and say, well, for this bill, we don't have to read it, and they, you know, avoid reading it. So we've been taking the perspective that, look, at this is important. We're going to read these bills. And what that does, just now that I'm getting to answer your question, that runs out the clock, or at least burns time on the clock. We have sine die as a constitutional requirement, and we have to exit the building and be finished with our legal requirements by sine die. And if we spend time, we make them, quote unquote, choose the appropriate bills. Where are they going to focus? What do they want to really happen? Are they going to waste their time on this issue that will cause burn more time off the clock or something like that? You remember, our founders knew all of this. Madison said, "If men were angels, no government would be necessary."
That's exactly right. Yeah, yeah. Well, I'd like to see some legal challenge to that stupid ballot initiative, but I suspect that we're going to have to wait until Democrats are in the minority, and then it will be seen as unfair, and they'll want to change it. Okay, let's go and take a break. Coming back, we'll be talking about socialized medicine. Stay with us. And we're back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today to Senator Dennis Lithcomb. He is joining us by phone from Salem. He is up there because the legislature is busily churning out bad bill after bad bill. But one they are actually forced to take up is thanks to Measure 111, which the voters of Oregon passed in 2022. And this added a constitutional amendment of which Section 47 of Article 1 now reads, quote, "It is the obligation of the state to ensure that every resident of Oregon has access to cost-effective, clinically appropriate and affordable health care as a fundamental right." It adds another subsection that says such an obligation to pay for everyone's health care must be balanced against funding for schools and other essential services. And right now, the Senate is trying to put together a task force to try to figure out how to spend $54 billion to provide free health care. So, Dennis, we're here because Kitzhaber's grand health care transformation was sold back in the early 2010s, 2011, actually, to Republicans that it would save the state money, that we'd pay less. And I don't think Oregon has paid one penny less on health care. And now we need to come up with $54 billion to pay for free health care. I mean, is that $54 billion, is that just the first estimate? What do you expect this is really going to cost?
Well, yeah, that's always the question. What is it it's really going to cost us? And you know, this is the most explosive, you know, healthcare concept that anybody has ever presented, because it destroys the real components of public health, which is individual responsibility. Whether that individual responsibility is managing your own health, taking good care of yourself, whether it's exercise, whether it's sunshine, whether it's vitamin D, vitamin C, and the use of ivermectin, you know, all of these things constitute what they claim is a public health need and something we should all be paying attention to and watching out for. But really what they've done is they've jumped onto the bandwagon for managing your own life and charging you while they do it. And so it's really an explosive entitlement, because there's a single payer out there. It doesn't matter what it costs, the single payer will take care of it. And so as it uncorks the backside of fiscal responsibility, health responsibility, and individual responsibility, there's no telling what the demand on the system will look like.
Yeah. Well, and of course, that's always the bugaboo when it comes to not just socialized medicine, but pretty much any socialist program, is how are you going to pay for it? And what's interesting, though, is that the language in Measure 110 called on the state to recognize healthcare as a fundamental right. And I mentioned this in my opener. I don't believe a right is something that someone else is forced to provide you. You're not entitled to someone else's labor. The right to healthcare is not in the Constitution. The right to food is not in the Constitution, or drinking water, or clothes, or shelter. These are all fundamental human needs, but these are not rights. What do you think? Is healthcare a fundamental human right?
Yeah, no, I was always recommending a no vote on that measure. I wrote a couple of articles about it, and And you make a great point. If my right now imposes on your ability to produce and create, and fulfill your own right, like you can no longer buy the meal you wanted to buy because you have to share it with me, or can no longer provide the health care you wanted to provide for your family, your sons, your daughter, your wife, and you, because you're now sharing those economic resources to provide those services to me and my family, then all of a sudden I'm really stripping you of your fundamental rights, if this mm-hmm. is a fundamental right. And so, again, it's the incontinuity and the lack of deep and thoughtful understanding that comes from the left and their desire to drain the public coffers. I was going to say proffers, but that didn't sound right.
No. So the right to self-defense is a fundamental right. That is in the Constitution. Should taxpayers be forced to provide free guns and ammunition?
Amen, brother.
I think it's just insane that here we are discussing $54 billion is somehow free. And of course, you know, as I said, that the big thing about socialized medicine or pretty much any Marxist program is that it comes down to who pays for all this free stuff when you individually can't pay for it. I mean, the rich have access to all sorts of million-dollar testing and healthcare situations, but now you're expecting the Oregon taxpayer to foot the bill for these massively expensive procedures or drugs or any number of things. I mean, at some point, this is going to cripple the taxpayer. Has that figured into the discussion at all? Is what happens when all of these costs just become so exorbitant we just can't continue to pay for this as a state? It's not like we're the federal government. We can just print money.
Well, yeah. So, no, see how they do it is they circle around so that, you know, it's a little bit like, pirates circling your home and saying, we're not really pirates. We're not really here. We're from the government. We're here to help you. And as they circle your home, they slowly get closer and closer to the fence line. And then they all of a sudden are inside your fence line and they say, oh, that was an accident or whatever. let me spell it out in the legislation. The legislation, Senate Bill 704, does not institute this so-called health plan. What it does is it creates a salaried board to investigate going towards single payer. And so now we're paying these, in quote, investigators, these people who are supposed to evaluate how to work their way into collaboratively with partners throughout the healthcare system, quote unquote, work their way into providing single payer healthcare. So this bill doesn't come up with a $52 billion cost. It actually comes up with nothing more than 9 salaried members who will be working hard to achieve single-payer health care. They did the same thing with the CAFO bill, Senate Bill 85. It says it's in the best interest of Oregonians to stop the proliferation of industrial confined animal feeding operation, that's CAFO, and with the impacts of industrialization and air quality and climate and water quality and water supplies in small and medium size. Therefore, the ag DEQ should not issue or renew any license until, and then it lays out this study, quote unquote, and it finally ends up and says, all the impacts described in Section 1 and recommendations concerning laws or rules that might be needed to ensure a high level of profitability or probability that any significant adverse impacts described in the Section 1 of this bill can be prevented, not mitigated, prevented.
Yeah. And so, well, fortunately, government is sometimes its own worst enemy. And so hopefully this will be dragged out for a long time, because I don't see how you can come up with $54 billion and somehow pretend that this is free. Okay, we do need to take a break. Everyone stay with us. We'll continue with Senator Dennis Lithcom talking about socialized medicine. There may be a solution to this. Stay with us. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We are talking with Senator Dennis Lithcom out of Senate District 28. That's in South Central Oregon, down by the Klamath Falls area. And so, Dennis, we're talking about socialized medicine, and this is we're talking about it because there's this task force that the Senate Bill 704 will set up. But there's this notion that, well, Measure 111 was, of course, passed because they want universal health care. They want socialized medicine. It doesn't actually say socialized medicine, but unless everybody involved in healthcare is working for free, I mean, it's never going to be free. So is there a solution here? Because the, as I said, Measure 110 did not specifically say they want socialized medicine. They want access to affordable medicine. And so that seems to me that would open the door to some free market solutions here, because that would make it affordable.
Yeah. Yeah. That was Measure 111. You said 110, which was the marijuana deal. But
Yes, you're right.
But just for your listeners, that was just the concept that public health, your health and well-being is your human dignity and human right, and it should be constitutionally protected. That's what that was. Well, then what that constitutional statement requires is implementation by the legislative body. So the legislative body here could have said, we're going to investigate the heck out of private market share. We're going to investigate all kinds of other solutions that have implemented it in the other 50 states. But what Senate Bill 704 does is it says in Section 5, it says the plan created by the Universal Health Governance Board, which is what 704 creates. It creates a Universal Health Governance Board. It says the plan must, there's a must clause there, implement a single payer universal health plan that is in keeping with the joint task force that completed in 2022. So there is no opportunity to investigate the free market alternatives to Medicaid, Medicare.
Well, but again, that's not what the measure said. The measure never said they wanted single payer. They never said they wanted socialized medicine. They just wanted access to affordable health care. And so couldn't there be an immediate court challenge on this, saying that you guys are actually making things less affordable, because you're just because somebody else is paying for it doesn't make it. I mean, all costs have to go into this, whether the state is spending the money or you are, as an individual, are spending the money. All of these costs have to be figured into this. And so it just seems to me that would be the natural challenge to this, is the measure never said single payer. The measure never said a socialized medicine. So shouldn't there, couldn't there be a challenge immediately if they do put this board forward? Shouldn't they be forced to consider alternatives?
Well, yeah, I've never seen, you know, the court step in and force somebody to do, the legislature specifically, to create a board and then force the board to follow something other than the legislative mandate. Their mandate here is in black and white. It's easy to interpret it. This board must implement a single payer health plan. And so that's where the legislative intent behind the ballot measure 111 was fraudulent from the get-go. They suckered the public into believing they had a right, which they did not have. It would be, it's beautiful, it's compassionate, it fills people with hope and gives them a sense of due dignity, and that, I get all of that, but they sold it under the idea that, and we can just do this. The same thing is happening with college debt. Look at the reason college tuition is so expensive, the reason college tuition costs so much money is it's not because of corporate America, it's because the teachers, the professors, the administrative staff, the janitor on the university grounds, all the employees at the university are making bank, and they're building their second home up at the lakefront, and they've got things, they've got their irons in the fire, and they want to make sure they get federal backing, because if the kids don't supply the needed revenue for their high tuition standards, then they're going to see their salary gains suffer. And so all of these things, every time government offers something for free, you have to realize, well, the only way government can provide anything is by taking it from somebody else.
Yeah, I think we need a new word for free, because it's constantly abused. Somebody is paying for that. Doctors and nurses and everybody else involved in healthcare are not working for free. Maybe we need to go with something like mandatory neighbor financed. Let's go ahead and take a break. We're coming into our final segment already. Coming up, so whatever happened to that kicker refund the state owes you? That next with Senator Dennis Lathcon. Back in our final segment now with Senator Dennis Lithcomb. He's out of District 28. That's in the Klamath Falls area in South Central Oregon. Goes from the California border all the way up to the outskirts of Bend and over to north of Medford as well. And so, Dennis, in the time that we have left, the last time we had talked, we didn't get it on air, but I had mentioned in my out last time something that we had discussed off air, the kicker. And at the time, as I recall, the Democrats were trying hard to not give back the kicker refund and instead trying to lock up those funds in new spending so they wouldn't have to give the money back, which by law they're supposed to give back. And it's not small chump change either. On average, working families were due to get $5,200 back. But you said that there's a real problem that they're not telling people about, which is this: they don't have those kicker funds in their bank account anymore. They've already spent it. And so to release that $5,200 average per family, they would then have to borrow it, which means they'd have to pay high interest rates on that. So am I remembering all of that right?
Yes, you are. In fact, the Fed just hiked 25 basis points. Mm-hmm. So we're at 5% at the top range, and in mortgage rates will be going up and houses will become more expensive and all that stuff. And so they don't have the money. It's a little bit, when we say they don't have the money, it's that they're simply broke in terms of collections from revenue coming in and how it gets spent during the year. There's always this point at where there's they haven't collected everything they're supposed to collect, i.e. April 15th is when the floodgates open and everybody pays their taxes on time. But in this little brief window between now and April 15th, we've run out of money from the prior year collections. And so now that we've run out, what Republicans were asking for is a check. We want the state of Oregon to send everybody a check for their due resources, which is an average of $5,200 per family. That's an enormous amount of money that could be utilized for any number of things, and we wanted a check. They said, well, we can't write a check because it's not in our checking account. And so now what they're doing is they're holding on to it, hoping to continue earning interest on the money they owe you, and hoping to keep your greedy little hands off of the money because their greedy little hands have it locked up in their own bank account.
So this is all a scheme to try to prevent the government paying back due to overcollections. That's the point of the kicker. It doesn't belong to them. Why do they think that they deserve to keep that money? I mean, it's just like this mindset that the government has that any money that's out there technically doesn't belong to you. It belongs to them. You just happen to be borrowing it for a while it's in your pocket.
Right. And you're right. See, this is a fundamental mindset behind those individuals that believe the government, the state, the agency efforts on whatever it is, whether it's healthcare, whether it's homelessness, whether it's providing a police service and fire service, all of those areas, they're good in their own right. Each of them has their own aspects. But when that becomes more important than your life, your freedom, your family's life, and your family's freedom, all of a sudden the cage has been rolled over and you're upside down. And so what we need is we need to get individuals elected who believe in the individual, who will support the individual and their inalienable rights, and support those inalienable rights at every twist of the knife. Because without that kind of support, the government will take over. Right now, they're trying to pretend that we're going to spend so much money before we get to the end of this session that, I'm sorry, we're going to have to keep the kicker and we're going to get a rebalancing of the revenue in May. And so we'll see what it looks like. I expect a downturn. I just mentioned the Fed rate hike went up by 25 basis points to a full 5%. This means liquidity is tightening. Federal funds target rate at 5% means interest on home loans will go up. Home loans will become less affordable. People will have trouble making their mortgage payments if they're purchasing a new home, if they have an inexpensive loan from a couple of years where Fed rates were down at 2.5% or 3%. That's great news from them. But inflation, meanwhile, is tearing up the rest of their budget. So the state is, you know, coming into that same problem. Public employees, returns, public employee cost of living adjustments and whatnot. The cost of government is going up and up and up, and they're going to want your money to meet what they think is a greater need.
Yep. And then on top of that, they're going to want to try to add $54 billion in free health care for everybody. It's just absolutely insane. Unfortunately, Dennis, we are up against the clock, but thank you so much for your time today.
Well, yeah, thank you. It's always great to discuss free stuff. By the way, you guys owe me a free dinner.
Okay. We'll have to make sure you get one.
Okay.
But we'll also have to make sure someone else pays for it. Hey, it's the Oregon way, right? Did you know it is easier than ever to submit testimony against bad bills and for good bills? All you really need is the bill's number. Head to olis.oregonlegislature.gov. That's olis, O-L-I-S, .oregonlegislature.gov. Click on the bills icon, then type in the bill number, select it, and at the top of that bills page, you'll see a Submit Testimony tab. That brings up a form, enter your name, your city, your comments in the text window, select whether you oppose or support, and boom, you're done. Easy peasy. You don't need to be elegant or verbose, just be heard. There's no excuse to be silent. And if you missed that, just see today's show page 13-12 at iSpyRadio.com, and we'll have the links and all the steps you need. Brian Dirks, who is a regular on the Jane Carroll Show's Conservative Council, recently reminded me that we shut down amnesty during the Bush-McCain years with phone calls and letters. Sometimes ground troops can win a battle. It's a good reminder. But also remember, silence has never changed anything. Don't be silent. Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.